This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 404 of Israel's genocide in Gaza as the war on Lebanon expands. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments in Gaza and Lebanon. Israel has continued to slaughter, starve, and forcibly displace Palestinians in the northern Gaza Strip as a complete siege on the area continues for the sixth week. Israeli forces carried out a recent series of massacres across Jabalia, Beit Lahia, and Beit Hanun. These massacres included bombing a residential building housing displaced families in Jabalia on Sunday, killing at least 36 Palestinians, including 15 children. In Beit Hanun, the northernmost city in Gaza, Israel has relentlessly bombarded the remaining homes and shelters, with reporters confirming that buildings have been flattened with people still inside, with no advance warning. Journalist Hossam Shabbat wrote, quote, "Beit Hanun is my beloved city where I was born and raised. In the early days of the genocide, it was the first city targeted by Israeli occupation forces to be wiped out. It had a population of 70,000. Now only 3,000 are left. Israeli forces have been trying to ethnically cleanse it for over a year now. They just invaded it again, surrounded the remaining schools, and are forcing the residents to leave under the threat of snipers and bombs." Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud reported on Tuesday that, quote, "There's a surge in attacks as the Israeli military pushes deeper in its armored vehicles and tanks into the areas in an attempt to force people out of Beit Hanun. For the past months, people in Beit Hanun could not leave the area because the Israeli military was blocking Salah ad-Din Street. As of today, there's a sudden surge in the attacks, with many reports of people killed inside these residential homes." Al Jazeera collected testimonies of Palestinians inside Beit Hanun over the last few days. One resident said, quote, "The Israelis have been wreaking havoc, killing in Beit Hanun all night long, pounding the few buildings still standing, especially those on crossroads. We could not even bury the dead. Many bodies are still buried under the debris. Israeli warplanes, quadcopters, and artillery have been bombarding us all night long. Even snipers were deployed and started gunning down civilians." Over the weekend, Israel delivered a reported 11 trucks of food, water, and medical supplies to the thousands of Palestinians in northern Gaza after more than a month of complete siege. Another eyewitness in Beit Hanun told Al Jazeera that, quote, "Only two relief aid trucks entered, one carrying flour, the other carrying canned food. The following day, the Israeli occupation forces stormed the area. They filmed the trucks only for their propaganda. As you see, we were forcibly evacuated, humiliated, and worn out." Rami Abdu of Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated on Monday, "Israel allowed a humanitarian aid truck into a shelter in the town of Beit Hanun amidst widespread media coverage. On Tuesday," Abdu adds, "Israeli forces stormed the shelter, killed civilians, forcibly displaced the rest, and set the humanitarian aid on fire." Quote, "You can imagine every form of brutality, but you'll never grasp the full extent of what Israel is doing," Abdu said. Anas al-Sharif and Hossam Shabbat, two of the only remaining journalists in northern Gaza who have been put on an assassination list by Israel, confirmed that Palestinians were forced to flee the shelters in Beit Hanun at gunpoint. And they keep reporting while their family members are being killed. Hossam Shabbat posted this video of him burying his 11 cousins after an Israeli attack in northern Gaza on Sunday. He writes, quote, "During the genocide, the act of burial has become a painful experience that has lost all its traditional meaning. We are forced to quickly bury our loved ones in makeshift graves. Important customs like communal mourning, prayers, and the gentle preparation of bodies have been replaced by a sense of urgency and deep despair. The traditions that once offered comfort and meaning in times of grief are now swallowed by chaos and the relentless sound of bombings, leaving us to mourn in an environment of unbearable sorrow." Israel has continued to attack the remaining hospitals in northern Gaza. At Kamel Adwan Hospital, the director, Dr. Hossam Abu Safia, who, as we reported, had to bury his own child in the hospital courtyard just 2 weeks ago, urgently called for the immediate delivery of essential supplies and ambulance services, in addition to lifting the siege on northern Gaza. In a statement released by the Gaza government media office on Sunday, Dr. Abu Safia said, quote, "We have begun to notice the emergence of cases of malnutrition and famine in the area. Northern Gaza is being subjected to a war of extermination, and we are suffering in silence as a result of the crimes committed against us. Our health system and the rights of our people are under severe threat, and we are in dire need of medical support. The crisis in northern Gaza continues, characterized by a systematic attack on our health system, where lives are being lost every day due to a lack of specialized care and resources. It is very unfortunate to receive distressing calls about people trapped under the rubble, and we are unable to help them. Just yesterday, we received reports of children and women trapped in difficult conditions, and today we mourn their loss as martyrs. This reality is unbearable. We are witnessing alarming cases of malnutrition among children and adults, and we are struggling to provide even one meal a day for hospital workers amidst a severe shortage of food and medical supplies." On November 5th, video released by Dr. Abu Safia showed doctors and hospital staff trying to evacuate injured and sick children from the hospital rooms amid Israeli attacks. Reporter Anas Al-Sharif stated that those attacks came after Israel directly targeted children in their hospital beds, burned the pharmacy, and destroyed the water tanks. That was inside Kamel Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia. In central Gaza, Israel carried out attacks in Nusayrat refugee camp, killing at least 9 Palestinians on Tuesday. This followed a series of ground and air attacks that killed at least 20 Palestinians on Monday as Israeli tanks stormed the camp, according to Al Jazeera. Also on Tuesday, Israeli forces killed at least 10 Palestinians in the so-called humanitarian zone in Al-Mawasi, the sand dunes on the southern coast of Gaza, bombing a tent that was a gathering place for people in Al-Mawasi to have coffee and tea. Tents of displaced people were once again bombed by the Israeli army inside the courtyard of Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah on Saturday. At least 2 people were killed and more than 24 injured. The Gaza government media office said that this was the 9th time since October 2023 that tents in the hospital courtyard were targeted. International experts on famine and starvation have warned yet again that starvation is imminent in northern Gaza. Action is needed, quote, within days to avert a catastrophe, according to the head of Oxfam's Food Security and Livelihood Program. He told Al Jazeera that people do not have any essentials for survival and that, quote, the average number of trucks coming in now is below 50. We used to have 500 trucks per day before October 7th, 2023, so you can imagine the huge needs people have compared to what's coming in. A new alert from the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, stated this week that aid shipments allowed to enter the Gaza Strip are now lower than at any time since October 2023. The report warned of, quote, an imminent and substantial likelihood of famine occurring due to the rapidly deteriorating situation in the Gaza Strip. Access to food continues to deteriorate, with prices of essentials on the black market soaring, the report adds. Cooking gas, for example, rose by 2,612%, diesel by 1,315%, and wood by 250%, it said. quote, concurrent with the extremely high and increasing prices of essential items has been the total collapse of livelihoods to be able to purchase or barter for food and other basic needs. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated on Sunday that, quote, given that Israel has blocked the entry of goods and aid to the hundreds of thousands of besieged residents in the northern Gaza Strip for more than 50 days now, the relevant international and UN organizations must formally declare famine in the region. Israel's use of starvation as a weapon is one component of its ongoing genocide in the Strip, which also includes mass killings and forced displacement. Such a declaration, quote, would require the international community to fulfill its moral obligations and take all of the necessary legal actions against Israel, such as punishing it with sanctions, preventing it from receiving weapons, and acting quickly to establish a humanitarian corridor and bring in aid and supplies to prevent thousands of Palestinians from starving to death. Euromed added, quote, since Israel has been committing the crime of starvation and using it as a means to carry out its genocide against the Palestinian people with the goal of eradicating them, the world is accountable for the famine crisis that Israel has caused in the Gaza Strip. Given the likelihood of dozens of deaths among the hungry every day, the international community is cautioned that this crisis is nearing its peak. Meanwhile, a coalition of eight international aid organizations have warned the Biden-Harris administration that Israel has failed to meet a set of criteria set out by the U.S. itself to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza. The so-called scorecard published by the aid groups was released on the 30-day deadline for action that the U.S. State Department gave to Israel last month to improve the, quote, deteriorating humanitarian situation in Gaza. Or it said it would ostensibly be required to invoke a federal law mandating the U.S. to halt assistance to governments who restrict U.S. humanitarian aid. The organizations state, quote, Israel not only failed to meet the U.S. criteria that would indicate support to the humanitarian response, but concurrently took actions that dramatically worsened the situation on the ground, particularly in northern Gaza. That situation is in an even more dire state today than a month ago. They add that, quote, the effectiveness of international diplomatic efforts to alleviate the humanitarian crisis in Gaza hinges on the willingness of the United States and other countries to push Israel to comply with these priorities. Continued non-compliance exacerbates civilian suffering and further undercuts the credibility of international legal frameworks and of U.S. law. The failure to meet humanitarian needs and respect international humanitarian law are already being repeated in Lebanon. Therefore, it is imperative that Israel takes immediate and substantive actions to meet its obligations under international and U.S. law, and that the international community, particularly the United States, holds it accountable for these commitments. On Tuesday, the U.S. State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel said that even though the 30-day deadline is up, the U.S. will not, in fact, limit arms transfers to Israel. Quote, we at this time have not made an assessment that the Israelis are in violation of U.S. law, Patel said, adding that the U.S. has assessed that Israel has made steps to improve but offered no details. When pressed by reporters, Patel explained, quote, we are not giving Israel a pass. We want to see the totality of the humanitarian situation improve, and we think some of these steps will allow the conditions for that to continue to progress. Israel has killed more journalists this week, bringing the number of media workers killed since October 2023 to nearly 190, according to the Gaza government media office. On Saturday, siblings Zahra Mohammed Abu Sahil and Ahmed Mohammed Abu Sahil, who both worked for the Media News Network, were killed in an Israeli attack on Gaza City. Journalist Khaled Abuzir, who worked for a local radio broadcaster, was killed last week, and Mohammed Khares, another reporter, was killed along with his wife, who were killed over the weekend in an Israeli airstrike on a tent west of Nuseirat refugee camp. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of this one by Fida El-Kedra, profiling Dr. Khaled Alser, a surgeon at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, after he was abducted, arrested, detained, and tortured by Israeli soldiers. We were in touch with Dr. Alser before his violent abduction and played voice messages he recorded for our live stream in February of this year. He was reporting from inside Nasser Hospital as it was being besieged and attacked by Israeli forces. Fida Al-Kadra writes that in late March, Israeli forces stormed Nasser Medical Complex for the second time during this ongoing genocide. Soldiers forced medical staff, including Al-Ser, to evacuate. Buzzing overhead, drones issued commands to leave the building. Despite wearing his white doctor's coat and a stethoscope around his neck, clearly identifying him as a medical professional, Al-Ser was detained. They made us strip our clothes and tied our hands and blindfolded us, he told the Electronic Intifada. It was humiliating, but worse than that, they treated us like criminals. We were just doctors trying to save lives. The soldiers then took Al-Ser and the others to a nearby house, which had been turned into a military command center. There, he said, he and his colleagues endured 5 days of detention under brutal conditions. They didn't give us any food for the first 4 days, Al-Ser said. And on the fourth day, in the evening, they brought us a small piece of bread and some cheese, barely enough to stay alive. Throughout the ordeal, the hands of the medical professionals remained tied, their eyes blindfolded, as they were subjected to aggressive interrogations and violent treatment, he recalled. After 5 days of torment, they were thrown into military jeeps, crammed together like sacks of vegetables. They piled us on top of each other, Al-Ser said. We were treated worse than animals, and the soldiers sat on us, mocking and beating us the entire way to the detention facility at Sedeh Tayman in the Negev Desert. The Sedeh Tayman detention facility, notorious for its brutal treatment of detainees, became Al-Ser's new prison. He described how the prisoners were not only dehumanized, but subjected to continuous physical and psychological abuse. They tied our hands and blindfolded us. We were not allowed to move, speak, or even look sideways. Any small movement resulted in savage beatings, Al-Ser said. One of the most harrowing aspects of the imprisonment was the sexual abuse and the use of excessive force against the prisoners, he said. They would beat us mercilessly, targeting sensitive areas of our bodies with truncheons, Al-Ser recounted. They even assaulted us sexually, using any means they could to degrade and humiliate us. They sprayed pepper spray on our private parts. It was unspeakable. The treatment was a calculated attempt to break the prisoners physically and mentally. What weighed most heavily on Al-Ser during his imprisonment was the uncertainty surrounding his family. I was constantly worried about them, especially since they had been displaced during the war. I heard rumors of military operations near Rafah, where they were staying, and I feared the worst, he said. Upon his unexpected release on September 30th, likely because he was not considered a threat, Al-Ser returned to work, determined to continue serving his people despite the trauma he had endured. But when he reunited with his family, they were living in the ruins of their house in Khan Yunis. We are strong and resilient people, he said, reflecting on his experience. This isn't the end. It's a testament. That's from Fida Al-Kadra's feature, Palestinian Surgeon Survives Sedeh Tayman and Ofer Prison, on electronicintifada.net. And turning northwards, Israel has continued to attack and destroy villages in South Lebanon while bombing areas of Beirut. On Tuesday, the Israeli army ordered the residents in 14 South Lebanese villages to flee, and that it intends to launch a military operation in those villages, according to Al Jazeera. The Al-Mayadeen news channel reported on Tuesday that Israeli warplanes attacked the southern town of Saksakiye, killing 7 people, while Israeli missile strikes attacked the towns of Debin, Yatir, and Burj Kalaway, Kana, and other villages in the Tayr or Suur district, and Israeli artillery shelling hit the town of Sheba. Israeli airstrikes on Saturday in Beirut targeted buildings on the Lebanese university campus. Bassam Badran, the university president, told reporters that the institution, quote, will remain resilient in the face of Israeli war machinery. These attacks will not deter it from continuing its mission of education and community service, he added. On Sunday, 23 people, including 7 children, were killed in Israeli attacks on the town of Almat, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, reported over the weekend that of the more than 3,200 people killed in Lebanon since October 2023, 200 of them were children. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to share videos of people expressing defiance and resilience in the face of Israel's widening campaign of destruction. This video shows Palestinian women making clothes for children using seashells as buttons. And this video shows women making croissants in the wreckage of their home in Gaza. And finally, our contributor Abu Bakr Abed uploaded this photo of him interviewing a young boy. The caption reads, "All that matters is hearing from these children and conveying their messages." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza.
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.